born in 1592 in the Highlands of Scotland, and he is still alive. He is immortal, constantly facing other immortals in combat to the death. The winner takes his enemy's head, and with it, his power. We know the truth about immortals. In the end, there can be only one. May it be Duncan MacLeod, the Highlander.
Here we are, born to be kings. We're the princes of the universe.
And welcome in to Let's Watch Highlander. This is Let's Watch Highlander Season 6, Episode 7, Unusual Suspects. And here to talk with you about it, as we are every week, I am Travis, a.k.a. TV's Travis, and that is the Audie Norman. Audie, how are you?
Doing all right. Feeling a little, like, just tired. My boys have been home since Friday. They've got, quote-unquote, winter break, so they don't go back to school until Thursday, so.
Weird to have, like, a short week that way, to have it be they go back really on a Thursday is. And Friday.
It's so weird. And then in a month, we have spring break. Like, in a month's time is spring break. So it's like, what are y'all doing?
I don't know. But, hey, you know, that'll wear anybody out, so I don't blame you for being a little tired.
Yeah.
I'm just, you know, getting through another week, another week of shows. I had one guest spot that got bumped by a week. So I'll be talking about Star Wars, The Clone Wars, a couple episodes of that, but next week now.
Nice.
So, you know. It's fun, though. I like going on some of the other shows and kind of doing some different topics, too.
Oh, heck yeah.
And Clone Wars is a lot of fun. So it's just an excuse to get to watch episodes of that. So I can't wait.
Right.
So we've got a fun episode this week.
Yeah, we do.
This one reminded me a good bit of The Ransom of Richard Redstone.
Mm-hmm.
And a little bit of The Stone of Scoon.
Mm-hmm.
It had a lot of that feel to it as well, for obvious reasons.
Right.
But yeah, I this was definitely an episode that the show needed at this point. We kind of needed a little palate cleanse and just something silly and fun.
Yeah.
And look, we get Fitz back, which is always a win. So
yeah, it is.
I did, believe it or not, manage to scrounge up a Watcher Chronicle for this one.
Nice.
Yeah, I had to dig a little further back. It wasn't in that box of cassette tapes that I had. This was on like an old phonograph. It's crazy. Yeah. So let's listen to that, and then we'll talk about the episode.
Heck yeah.
The 28th of October, 1929. Well, this has certainly become an interesting few days. Seems that Hugh Fitzgerald has gone and gotten himself killed. I was present for the funeral and saw that Duncan MacLeod arrived partway through. I'm going to keep an eye on things around the manor. I managed to overhear the two immortals talking, and it seems that Fitz believes he was murdered. Between his wife, lawyer, accountant, and business partner, any one of them could be behind it. MacLeod will have to keep the hounds at bay until they can figure out who would want to kill Fitzcairn, and more importantly, why.
So we open up in October of 1929 at the Fitzcairn estate in England, and a car is driving up when the butler runs out to greet him. And the car drives right onto the butler's foot.
That was my first note. That poor guy.
And this gives you the setup for the tone of this entire episode right off the bat. Because the car comes to rest on his foot. And out steps Hugh Fitzcairn. Mm-hmm. And who we haven't seen since the Stone of Scone. I was super happy to see that.
Yep.
And he looks at Pierre and says, "Give it a wash up, won't you, boy?" And like tosses him the key. Meanwhile, Pierre is in so much pain he can't speak, and he's like trying to point to his foot, and Fitz just completely ignores him and walks past.
Yep.
And that's immediately, you know, kind of what you're getting into with this episode. So Fitz goes into his house and walks in, and in like a grand ballroom, there's a few people sitting on some couches. There's a couple of musicians at one end, one with an upright bass and one with a guitar. And Fitz comes in, takes off his overcoat, hands it to the guy with the guitar. And then takes off his other coat and his scarf and hands it to the guy with the guitar. And takes off like his third jacket. So he's just in his shirt and vest, hands that to the guy with the guitar, and then tells everybody, you know, he's happy that they're all here for the annual Fitzcairn grouse hunt and executive witch hunt. And the men that are there are not impressed, and they're annoyed. But it is his business partner, Percy Tynebridge, his solicitor, Norbert Drimble, and his accountant, Simon Loxley, as well as his wife, Juliet.
Mm-hmm.
So Fitz brings Juliet up, and they do a song together. She's singing, he's playing the clarinet, they got the guitar and bass. When Fitz starts to stumble while playing the clarinet, missing notes, sounding all off, then he just keels over right there in front of everybody. And they rush up, they check his pulse, and he's dead.
Dun, dun, dun.
So the next day, we see a very small funeral. And by small, I mean it's just the people that were in the house. And that's right. It. Duncan shows up partway through, and after a very moving eulogy from Juliet, in which she does a spoken word rendition of the song Fiddle-Dee-Dee, Duncan feels an immortal and heads over to the greenhouse where Fitz is hiding amongst all his plants. And Fitz claims he was murdered. Now, Duncan, of course, is like, look, come on. You would stage your own death just to hear your own eulogy. And I love Fitz's reaction. Well, yes, actually, I would. But no, this time I was murdered, I promise.
Yeah, it's like, oh, hey, that's a good idea to try sometime. But this time.
So Fitz claims that he was murdered because obviously, you know, immortals don't die of a heart attack unless it's induced by something. The problem is Fitz put all his money into American stocks and as a sort of come back to life fund. You know, set up a new life thing. So all of his money is in U.S. stocks, but all the paperwork isn't done yet. So he wants Duncan's help to figure out to figure out who killed him and why. So Duncan's like, fine, whatever, fine, I'll help. You know, he doesn't really want to, but at the same time, it's Fitz, it's his friend, so he does. So Duncan calls everybody into the house and lets them know that he is the sole executor of Fitzcairn's will, and that it's going to be 2 days before he can read the will, which Loxley and Tynebridge are like, screw this, and get up and get ready to leave. You know, we're busy men. We don't have time for this crap. And, you know, let's go back to the city. And Duncan's like, well, just so you know, it's stipulated that the only people that get anything out of the will must be present at the will reading. And I love Tynebridge's response. Well, I mean, nobody should be traveling in this terrible weather anyway.
Right.
And then just smash cut to a beautiful visual outside, bright, sunny day. So now we get some hilarity ensues, right? As Duncan, Fitz is trying to eavesdrop through a painting at what's going on. Duncan, of course, notices him. Pokes his eyes through the painting, which was a funny moment. He slips off into the other room, is trying to talk to Fitz. Juliet comes in, trying her best to seduce Duncan into telling her what's in the will. Duncan refuses. There's just all sorts of goofy zaniness where Fitz wants a plan to get his money back, to figure out who killed him. And Duncan is like, you're an idiot, and how are we going to do any of this? And Fitz is like, hey, put the grouse hunt on. And I love Duncan's reaction. What? Give them all guns?
Right.
You know, because here they are suspecting any one of these four people to have killed Fitz. Now Fitz wants to give them guns, and he's like, yeah, no, do that. Because then one of them will shoot you, and we'll figure out who it is. Just kind of foolproof logic, really, from an immortal. So they do that. No one attacks Duncan. But now Drimble, the solicitor, is shot and killed during the grouse hunt. When and how, I don't know, but it doesn't matter.
Right.
So they go back inside, and there's more finger pointing, you know, who could do this, blah, blah, blah. They mentioned Pierre. And then Duncan's like, well, we'll send Pierre to get the local cops. And Pierre comes in with his foot broken. He's like, well, I guess that's not happening.
Yep.
So then the maid is in serving drinks, and she gives just really bad side eye to Juliet, and Duncan notices it, and so he goes to talk to her, and she claims Marie, the maid, claims she is carrying Fitz's child. And then admits to an affair with pretty much every man that's been on the compound.
Like, okay. Good Lord.
So then she gets upset, gets Duncan out of the kitchen. Duncan's confused. He doesn't really know what's going on at this point. She's wandering the house for some reason when she sees Fitz, thinking it's a ghost, and faints. I'm not sure why she was up there, but whatever.
She's the maid. She could have reasons.
Yeah. So cut to after the commercial break, Duncan is in the same hallway, and she kind of gets spooked by him. She's like, did you see that? See what? No, nothing. I didn't see anything. And she leaves. And then Duncan feels an immortal, turns around, and Fitz is inside a suit of armor in the hallway.
Yeah.
Hiding in the suit of armor in the hallway. And they continue to argue. Fitz just wants a plan to get his money back. And Duncan's like, I'm trying to figure it out. Would you just shut up and go away? And they argue. Duncan leaves, and he finds a dead rat by the clarinet and puts two and two together and figures out that there was poison involved.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes to the dining room where the other three are. They've been waiting for him, and he lets out that he figured out that it's poison, and he basically accuses Tynebridge of doing it, because Tynebridge was with Fitz in Brazil where the poison came from.
Mm-hmm.
That's another one of those really funny scenes, because it's your classic murder mystery scene, sitting around a dinner table, storm going on outside, so there's thunder and lightning. And I love, as they're talking about it, Loxley is just getting more and more confused by what's going on
the whole time. Well, no, he gets confused about a totally different subject. Which,
right, that's kind of what I mean. Like, he's getting more and more confused by what's going on, but it's not for the reasons that he should be confused by what's going on. It's like something completely different. And Duncan lays out that he basically thinks it was Tynebridge without saying that. Then they're like, well, nobody's going anywhere in this storm anyway, when Marie runs in and she found Pierre bludgeoned to death in the garage. So
poor guy.
They haul that body to the meat locker with the other body, because it's the only place to keep him from smelling.
Yeah.
More suspicion towards Tynebridge, as he makes note that Pierre's ribs are broken as well, which, how would he know that?
Yeah.
So it becomes more and more kind of this, like, there's zany moments. Then we see Juliet and Loxley were having an affair, and they meet clandestinely in the hallway in front of Fitz in the suit of armor.
Yep.
So he gets upset with that. After they take off for a bedroom, he goes to find Duncan, but he can barely move in that suit of armor for some reason, and then falls down the stairs. Which, of course, makes a whole bunch of noise, so Duncan's got to stash him. And everyone comes down, and he's like, I don't worry about it. Just go back to bed. But the only two of them come down, if you noticed.
Right. I did.
And he sends everyone back off to bed, and later on it's found that Loxley is dead. Stabbed in the chest. He was found by Juliet, who for some reason was in his room, and now she's is suspected as well. Meanwhile, Duncan is still trying to convince Fitz. Now Duncan is trying to convince Fitz, hey, look, I think it's Juliet. I think she did it. And Fitz's like, no. She loves me. There's no way. It couldn't be. It's got to be Tynebridge. I've never trusted him. Like, it's that classic, I've never trusted him about everybody, from Fitz.
Right.
So as things go on, the next morning, everyone is awoken to somebody at the front door ringing the doorbell and smacking on the door. And I love Marie going down the stairs towards the door with the cross in her hand, because she's spooked. Mm-hmm. She just thinks the whole place is haunted now. And she opens up the door, and there's an old man standing at the door. And it's Fitz in really bad, 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 bad makeup. Claiming to be Hugh Fitzcairn Sr.
Of course.
And he's upset, and he wants to know what's going on, and da-da, and he just comes in all blustery, and he's got... I loved, like, the giant nose he had on. He's wearing a fat suit. He's got a fake beard. And he's blustering and all this. And then Marie finds Juliet in her room, where she's been locked all night, dead.
Mm-hmm.
So now Fitz is super upset. And it's probably my favorite scene is the one with Fitzcairn and Duncan where Fitz is wearing like half the fat suit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he's just freaking out on him and yelling at him about how Juliet's dead and he needs to figure this out. And he's bumbling it all up. And Duncan's just confused. Like, I don't know what's going on.
I don't blame him. Like, right after Juliet was dead, my note is, what the heck is happening? And I did not write down heck.
So Juliet's found dead. Duncan walks in on Tynebridge, packing up like he's going to leave. And Duncan's like, ah, no, you're not. You're the only one left. Obviously, it's you. And Tynebridge even had a bunch of, like, silver and china and stuff in his luggage. He was just trying to take. So Duncan's like, all right, dude, you're not going anywhere. I'm going. The phones are fixed somehow. I didn't know they were broken, but whatever. I don't remember them saying anything about it, but Duncan's like, the phones are working now. I'm going to go call Scotland Yard. You're staying here. And he basically makes him stay in that room and leaves.
And well, he ties him to the chair.
Oh, that's right. He does tie him to the chair. Leaves. And just after he leaves, one of the other doors opens up and a little blowgun pokes its head out and he gets hit with a dart in the neck.
Yep.
So Duncan shows up, comes back in and finds him dead. So now they got another body they got to take to the cold storage. And as they're dragging, as he's dragging that body in there, who shows up but Juliet?
Wait, what?
Yeah, she's alive. And was behind the whole thing. She found a second poison while they were in Brazil that can mimic death without actually killing the person. And she used that on herself to fake her death, to throw everyone off the trail. And she shoots Duncan, gets him out of the thing. Well, then Fitzcairn is there.
Right.
And she eventually shoots him, and he falls over. And I can't, she's like standing over them for a reason of some kind when, oh, I think
yeah,
she's
goes over to Duncan.
Yeah.
She goes over to Duncan to be like, sorry, babe.
And then Duncan wakes up. And so does Father Fitzcairn, claiming that there were blanks in the gun.
Yeah. I knew all along.
And Duncan was like, of course they were. Yes, they were blanks. I suspected you all along and I switched the bullets and.
And, good save, Duncan.
Yeah.
Good save.
So they Scotland Yard shows up. They arrest Juliet. And as she's being loaded into the car and driven off, Fitz walks out the front of the house. So she sees him. She's freaking out, yelling at, you know, you're supposed to be dead. If it's the last thing I do, I'll get you, blah, blah, blah. And Fitz is just all like chest puffed out, like, haha, figured it out.
And yep.
Duncan's got a newspaper in his hand. He's looking at it when he gets a little confused look on his face. As Fitz is like, well, I guess it's time to make my way to America and collect my money. And so Duncan says, sure, good luck with that. Hands him the newspaper and walks away. Because it's Tuesday, October the 29th, 1920.
What the devil did you do that for?
You want me to help?
Then don't interfere. We're a team. A team, laddie.
Yes, some team. Now that they think that I've got the real will, how long do you think before one of them wants to kill me?
You're right.
Okay, so, special guests. Look, it's Fitz, Roger Daltrey.
Heck yeah.
I mean, that was the best part. I love that they would do these episodes to bring him back. They did one last season. They do this one this season. It's all in flashback, so they can have him there the whole time. And as we mentioned at the top of the show, this has that, you know, Ransom of Richard Redstone, Stone of Scoon, kind of goofy feel to it.
That it really does.
Is perfect for having Fitzcairn in and is a nice little kind of palate cleanser. It's just a fun little silly adventure, riff on a murder mystery at the country house. And it's just a lot of fun. And Roger Daltrey, as always, is fantastic.
Oh, yeah. He's great. You know, his chemistry with Adrian Paul is still there. They riff off each other so well. Like, it's just fun to watch.
And he's just, he's silly, he's bombastic, he's ridiculous, hiding in the suit of armor, barely able to move in the suit of armor, like, really playing that gag up. I love when he falls down the stairs and he's stuck with, like, one leg straight up in the air for whatever reason.
That's this whole episode, for whatever reason, is yes. an explanation for just about everything in this whole dang episode.
Oh, it was so good. The best, though, is the fat suit and the father playing his own dad with, like, he put makeup on his nose to make his nose look bigger. And it's just ridiculous enough, but you also kind of know, like, in 1929, with what these people had been through, they probably wouldn't have questioned it.
Right.
But
they would have thought better of it.
Yeah. The scene, though, with after they find Juliet, that scene is so good because he doesn't have the fake beard or the fake nose or anything on, so it's just Roger Daltrey's head and then that fat suit body. And he's just
1920s fat suit.
Yes. And he's upset and he's getting angry, but you can't take him too seriously because he's also, like, just bulbous. And it's so good. It's such a great scene. And he sells it because he doesn't play it for laughs at all, is what makes it funny. And
it's
what
like
makes
the,
it work.
The one time in the episode that he's actually, like, heartbroken and upset over what's going on.
Yeah. And to his credit, like, that's been his one through line in this entire episode, was that he loved Juliet and Juliet loved him. From the very first interaction with him and Duncan, he was talking about that. So he never wanted to believe it was Juliet through most of the episode.
Like, and he convinced Duncan to stay because his concern was, like, Juliet's probably next. If they're coming after me for whatever reason, they're probably coming after her.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so when she's found dead, like, he's genuinely upset, and it makes sense that he would get, like, much more serious, because he's been seriously, like, wanting to find out who did this to him, but still very slapsticky and very, like, Hugh Fitzcairn. And this is the other part of him that gets to be a little bit more serious. He's like, no, the woman I love is dead now, and we need to figure out who did this. So it was good, but just Daltrey had so much fun with this character, and it's just great. I never get tired of seeing him on screen in this show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cleo Rakos plays Juliet, and she does a great job of being a damsel in distress, but not. Like, if you watch the episode, even if you're watching it for the first time, you sort of don't trust her because she's immediately trying to get, like, information out of Duncan about the will.
Right. As soon as he mentioned the will's going to take 2 days, and her reaction, I was like, my note was, she killed him. Yeah. It was her.
What I liked was,
I don't know why or how, but
yeah. And it's sort of the through line of this entire episode is, like, it is a murder mystery, but it's also subverting the tropes of the murder mystery, but it's doing them all too. And, like, they totally give away that it's her right away, but then they try to play it off like it's not. And I think she does a good job of flipping and flopping and being, she thinks she's being convincing. The character of Juliet feels that she's convincing all of these men that she had nothing to do with his death, but she's terrible at being convincing about that.
Well, I mean, she's convincing enough. Nobody really thinks about it. Well, until she's one of the last few left alive.
Yeah, I mean, Duncan, I think, has suspicions, but at the same time, there's sort of, you know, Duncan being the overly chivalrous guy that he is, will push those suspicions aside at first. But, like, just her style of doing, her convincing everybody isn't great. Like, she slips up a lot, but the era that this is taking place in, she's kind of able to get away with it more. She also screams a lot, and that was kind of a fun running gag. It's, like, annoying, but also funny.
Like, something about the way this episode is written, it is all tropes, and yet they make them work, and you enjoy it because of the way they make them work. Like, her screaming throughout the episode as a running gag until the very end when Duncan at last is like, would you stop screaming?
Yes.
Is just hilarious.
Well, it's because every time somebody is either found dead or mentioned to be dead, she shrieks. And when they're inside, my favorite part of it, by the way, because it happens throughout the episode, but my favorite part is anytime they're indoors and she does that, you hear glass breaking at the end of her scream. Every single time. it's so dumb, and it's so well executed, and I absolutely found that hilarious because of the dumbness of it. It felt like this episode was clearly inspired not just by your classic murder mysteries, but by movies like Murder by Death and Clue.
I was going to say, this felt like they were trying to do a Mel Brooks thing with Highlander.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that Mel Brooks energy to it as well. So having that kind of a running gag works. Having like the scene in the kitchen with Duncan and the maid, where she's like, "I'm carrying his child," and Duncan says, "Are you sure it's his?" Obviously knowing that Fitz can't have kids, and she flips out. "Do you think I would be with? I would love someone else. I would give this body, this temple, to anyone else, like the butcher, the baker, or the chauffeur." And she just starts naming everybody off.
Right,
like, Tynebridge. Well, that was only once, but. And Duncan's just like, "I can't even keep up with my notes."
Yeah.
Like, it was just so ridiculous, and I love that. One other special guest I want to mention is, because the guy, the two actors that played Tynebridge and Brimby, I didn't recognize. Mm-hmm. I didn't really know from anything.
No.
Just kind of English character actors.
Mm-hmm.
However, Nicholas Clay, who played Loxley, I have seen.
Okay.
He was in Excalibur as Sir Lancelot.
Oh, okay.
He was also in the Merlin miniseries from 98 with Sam Neill.
Oh, how about that?
And the thing that I remember him the most for, because I definitely remembered him in Excalibur, but I am a huge Sherlock Holmes fan.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite on-screen representation of Sherlock Holmes has been it started in the mid 80s and ran through like the early 90s. It was Granada Television and it was Jeremy Brett.
Okay.
So they had like the adventures and the casebook of Sherlock Holmes. And there was when they did, and these were all like faithful recreations, period pieces. So in the episode, The Resident Patient, Nicholas Clay plays the doctor. And I just, I've seen that episode a number of times because I love that series so much. And so I remember him from that. So it's like that and Lancelot and Excalibur, this guy just burned into my memory. And this was sadly one of the last things Nicholas Clay did. He did the Merlin miniseries the year after this, a couple of more things, but he passed away in 2000. But I liked him a lot. And like, my favorite scene with him is that dinner scene where he's just getting confused. Why were you're eating monkeys? Why would anyone do that? And just
it's so good. If you haven't watched the episode, they talk about going to Brazil and they, talking about the poison that Duncan found and how it came from Brazil and they used it to shoot monkeys. And he's like, "Why would you shoot a monkey?" And it's like, "To eat them." He's like, "Who would eat a monkey?" And then everybody else is like, "They're not too bad. They are all," and then they all are like, "Tastes like chicken."
And he just like, he won't let that go. And it's so good. Oh,
like, why would you shoot a monkey? I was like, "Oh, Lord."
He killed me in that scene. It was great. But I mean, it's
while they're all talking about the murder mystery, he's still stuck on the monkey thing.
He just can't get off this idea that somebody would shoot a monkey with a dart and eat it. But it's really good special guest. This episode, it needs it. It needs to have like silly acting in it. And everybody does. Everybody that was in this episode understood the assignment and what they were doing.
Absolutely.
And they were, because they all towed the line of being, nobody went, I mean, okay, Fitz, but Fitz always kind of goes a little over the top. Daltrey does. Mm-hmm. And Juliet is a little bit over the top, but she kind of has to be as well. But like everybody understood where the line was and what was too much, and they stepped right up to it, and they had a lot of fun while doing it.
Because we've had fun episodes like this before. And so Highlander gets to play with that a little bit. And like, and again, they go up to the line, but they don't cross it to where it just feels campy, where it just feels like nothing but tropes. Like,
yeah,
they just do it within the bounds of what works and is, you know, kind of logical enough in a series where people are immortal.
Yeah. And you can have fun, but if you go too far, then it loses the entertainment value. They keep it fun.
Mm-hmm.
They keep it, they go silly, but they keep it fun silly. It never becomes like, oh, this is a chore to get through type silly.
And not quite too unbelievable. I mean, there's plenty of places where it's unbelievable.
Oh, but sure.
It's like we said, they stay within the bounds of that to where it's not ridiculous.
But like it's
it's still fun.
Yeah, it's much closer to something that Mel Brooks would write and direct than it is like the bad parody movies like Epic Movie.
Right.
And those kinds where they're just too much. Like they're trying. This doesn't have that try hard feel. It has that feel of like, we want to do a farce. We want to do a silly farce of a thing. And that's where we'll go. So, yeah, I very much enjoyed that. It's good special guest work.
Excuse me, sir, but just who are you?
I am Hugh Fitzcairn Sr., father of Hugh Fitzcairn Jr., and sole heir to his estate.
Funny, I don't see the resemblance.
And really, that's kind of what there is to talk about with this episode. There's no fights.
Right?
There's no sword fight. It's all a flashback. So
there's no Joe. I find it hilarious that we get an episode with Fitzcairn and we still haven't had Amanda or Mythos, even though they've been credited this entire season.
Yes. 7 episodes into the season. They've been in the opening credits of all 7 episodes and haven't shown up yet. And we get Hugh. We get Fitz. That's just amazing. But you know, you can tell, like, this is how you do a budget episode, right? Because clearly, small cast, so we don't have a lot of people to pay. We don't have to deal with extras. Yep. We don't have to deal with, like, that kind of setup. We're going to set the whole thing in this house in the countryside. So it's easy to get our exterior shots without having anything to do with Paris or whatever city we're near. And we have the full run of the interiors in a location that they've clearly, I'm pretty sure we've seen before.
Yeah.
As well. So like single location, small cast, and it's a period piece, but it's only a few decades back. So the costuming isn't that hard to find. So it's like all those are hallmarks and point to budget episode. But they do it in a way where it doesn't feel like a cheap episode.
Not at all.
And that was what worked. And I think setting the whole thing as a flashback, number one, obviously lets you write in Fitz. But number two, now you don't have to juggle 2 different time frames and spend all the money on those costumes and then get 1 day's worth out of them for 4 minutes of screen time.
Right.
And that expense for that small amount of screen time and still have to build a story everywhere else. So it's definitely a budget episode, but it doesn't feel like a budget episode.
Yeah.
And I liked that they wanted to have fun with it and make it a farce and just have just be silly.
Right. Because there's definitely parts in this where you're like, what? Like when, who's it? Trimble gets shot at the.
Oh yeah. At the grouse hunt. Yeah.
It's like, they never explain how that happened or how that worked.
Nope.
Because Duncan is literally looking at everybody while they're all shooting. And they're all shooting up in the air. And then all of a sudden he falls over like, he's been shot. Or then when Loxley gets stabbed, it's like, he's been stabbed. I'm like, that just, okay, the knife's just sitting there. Okay.
But
that
just, and they left
we
it
really
there.
Inspect?
Yeah.
You know? And when Juliet's dead, it's like, okay, I guess we checked her pulse and we just left her there. Okay. Okay.
Sure. Yeah, why not? She's the only one they didn't drag to the meat locker.
And then just Fitz in the armor. Like, there's no explanation for why that is. They don't explain if it's the armor getting stuck or anything, or if it's Fitz just getting stuck because he's been sitting in the same pose for however many hours he's been sitting there.
Yeah.
They never explain how easy it is to get in or out of that armor, because, good Lord, one girl faints and all of a sudden Fitz is right in that armor, like.
Yeah, and these are
that easy to get into,
and like all this stuff should be knocks against it, and we should be complaining about it. But it's just it's the energy of the episode, and you're just like, nah, we'll just run with it. This is a cartoon. This is a Scooby-Doo episode of Highlander.
Yeah,
but I think it works for a few different reasons. Number one, Adrian Paul, Roger Daltrey. Their chemistry works. If Fitz is going to show up, things are going to get more lighthearted anyway. But also, after last week's episode was super serious and just not good.
Yeah.
That going in the other direction and getting silly with it and kind of just saying like, no, we're cool. We can relax and have fun with this stuff. And now we can get back to maybe having more serious stories. I don't know what next week is going to be like, but this kind of just helped balance the scales out a little bit and give us something fun. They were having fun with it. That was, I think, the biggest issue last week was Black Tower. It was Black Tower. Wasn't fun, and they weren't having... They were like... It was serious, but it wasn't a well-done serious, and so it just felt like a chore.
Yeah.
And because...
Last week's felt like a budget episode.
Yes. Yes, it definitely did. Because it's got this... Think about it. It's set in one time period. Well, they did do flashbacks, but they were like... three people in the flashbacks. But like last week's episode is one location and a very simple story and a small cast. But for some reason, it feels like a budget episode. This doesn't have that feel. And I think because this is better written in that it's not trying to take itself too seriously.
Yeah.
Because you think about the elements of last week's episode that didn't take themselves too seriously were like the computer geek, which just felt super out of place for everything else that was going on.
Yeah, or just not explained well enough.
Yeah.
Like, that's something where we need a little bit more explanation. In an episode with Fitz, gosh, we're on board. Like, obviously, we are biased because we love Roger Daltrey as Hugh Fitzcairn.
That's true.
So when he shows up, we're on board, whatever the freak it is. And this one, it was a freaky episode, and it was amazing because of that, and we're on board because of Roger Daltrey and what his energy brings to an episode of Highlander.
Yeah.
There was no charm like that in last week's episode.
No, there wasn't, because the villain was such a straightforward and boring villain, and the fake out of the girl that he was dating that we'd never seen before, and the computer geek character, they tried to sort of make that into like a sympathetic character at the end, but we didn't have enough time with him to really care because we didn't know any of these characters. Whereas here, you get the, if you're a fan of the show, throwing Fitz in there is immediate shorthand for, okay, cool. So we know their backstory already. We know that they get along. We like this guy. And so you can throw a lot more crazy stuff at us and we're going to take it. We're going to accept it more. So,
and it just went down the trope of a murder mystery farcical thing and just... one by one, somebody dies, somebody dies, somebody dies. Like, seriously, when Juliet was dead, WTF is in my notes. And I'm like, saying that both, like, what the heck is happening? It's like, this is hilarious. I don't know what the heck is happening, but it's, I'm here for it, whatever this is.
And I mean, I'm a sucker for a murder mystery anyway, because there's such a fun, tropey story to tell, and there's so many ways you can go about it. You can go straight forward with it. You can go the Knives Out route and subvert the tropes. This kind of did... This wanted to subvert tropes, but also play to the tropes at the same time. And so it's just fun.
And then even playing with us, with giving us a very specific October 1929 at the beginning of the episode. Like, I wrote down that note, and it's like... That's kind of specific. Like, usually we just get a year.
Yeah.
Just a year. But we get specifically October 29 in England. And Fitz casually mentions where his money is in the American stock market. And we're like, okay, interesting. You know, mortals do what they do. And then to get the reveal at the end when Duncan gives him the paper of this, like, these very specific history, if you're not a history buff, which I'm not. Like, I had to Google it just to make sure I was... you know, looking at the right thing. Like, this was the gigantic crash of Wall Street in 1929.
Yep. All of Fitz's money's gone. Because he had it all in the stocks, and that was Black Tuesday. And that, oh, that tickled me so much. That was such a great ending for this episode. It was like, that was the perfect way to end this episode, because the whole time, what did he care about the most was finding out who killed him so he could get his money back.
Right.
And then he lost it all anyway. And Duncan just kind of like, once again, Duncan's like, well, this is your dishwashing liquid. You soak in it. And he just walks off. And it's, oh, well, it's so
it was
good.
Great. He talked about hiring him on as the dishwasher or something. And I was like, oh, my gosh.
I love it.
Just their their banter right at the end to close it out. It was just like, oh, my gosh, thank you.
It's just the music in this episode was fun because it was very lighthearted and silly.
Mm-hmm.
And they leaned into the tone that they were going for with this.
Yep.
With everything. Like that's another thing that should be annoying is going lighthearted with that music. But we've talked about Roger and how good he was at creating these motifs and the fact that he had to do that for every specific episode.
Right.
So, you know, for him to come up with something like the music in last week's episode, fine, but there was nothing special about it. It was kind of bland, but that was that whole episode. But this one, the visuals and the story had such an energy to it, and the music just added to it. So,
yep.
They, like I say, everybody working on this one, from Dennis Barry was directing it, who's one of the better directors of the series, and really coming through in these last couple of seasons. Adrian Paul and Roger Daltrey, all the actors, Roger Bellon, everybody understood the assignment. And and went full force with it and just had fun.
Yep. I mean, yeah, it was great. Oh my God. Okay, one more thing I have to mention.
Oh, definitely.
When Hugh finds out about Marie having the baby. Yes. One of my favorite comedic lines of this whole damn show.
So
when he's like, Duncan's like, she's carrying your child, and he's like, oh my gosh, can you believe that? How great would that be? Teaching him to ride a bike and everything? It's like, you're immortal, you can't have kids. That's slut.
Yeah.
Well, like that line, that delivery.
That's news worth dying for.
Mm-hmm.
And then for him to get all excited and then immediately turn on her. And then it's like, that's Fitz, though. He's so
right
of the moment that it's like, no, it definitely was Brimby, right? It was my solicitor. And then when he dies, I knew it wasn't him. It couldn't have been. It's got to be this one. And he's just pointing the finger at whoever. And it's like, you know, Marie is great, but then no, she's terrible because she slept with somebody else, but she's my maid. But like, just back and forth all over the place, and it cracked me up.
Help me out. Do we ever get a reason why Juliet did all this?
No.
Like, I don't remember her saying specifically anything.
No, I think she just wanted his money.
Mm-hmm.
She figured she was his wife. She'd get it all, I guess. I don't know. It's weird, but we're given as much explanation of that as how the rest of them got, like, who beat up Pierre, who right. bludgeoned him to death, when we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's never explained.
Right.
So, but that's this episode. This episode doesn't explain anything. Right. It's just there to be a goofy, silly, fun episode. And I loved every second of it.
Yeah. Same.
Now next week is episode 8, Justice. We are past the halfway mark.
Daggone.
Of this season already. We are at episode 8 of 13, Justice. And I don't remember this one, so I don't consciously remember it by title, but we'll see when I get watching it how much of it comes back.
We'll see.
Well, they got a high bar to clear now. They've given us something fun, so we'll see what happens with next week's episode. If you want to hang out with us while we record the show, we do record it live Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern time, twitch.tv/TVsTravis. And then, of course, we edit everything down. We put it out as a podcast on Thursdays over at anchor.fm/Let's Watch Highlander, where you can get this episode and the preceding just over 100 episodes that we have done of this show.
Nice.
Five plus seasons. In between seasons, we review the different Highlander movies for good or ill. And we've got a fun one coming up after this season. I can't wait to talk about that one. We've been doing this show for a little while now. If you do enjoy it, obviously, you know, spread word of mouth to anybody that you know that might be interested. And ratings and reviews on all your podcast platforms are great. We love to see that. We like feedback. You know, if you're listening to this show and you like Immortals, give us a little feedback. Let us know what you think, either in a review on a podcast platform or hit us up on Twitter. I'm on Twitter at TV's Travis, and I love to hear from Highlander fans. Do you like the show? Do you remember watching Highlander? Do you hate it? Do you hate our takes on stuff? Do you disagree with it? Like, we want to know these kind of things. Audie, you're on there as the Audie Norman, correct?
That's right.
It's also where you can find all of Audie's artwork, which is fantastic. And this one was great because I knew you were going to do Fitz. Fitz and Duncan. The theme for this season has been great.
It's been fun to play with.
Yeah, and that was a perfect Fitzcairn. Loved it.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely check that out. The Audie Norman and TV's Travis on Twitter. We want to hear from you. So for Audie, this is Travis. And until next week, Episode 8, Justice. Remember that there can be only one Hugh Fitzcairn.
Who would shoot a monkey?
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.